The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
But did anything go through your head at that moment? Was that you saying, right?
That was me saying, this is the first time he touched the ball in the final, and thank God I did something half decent with it.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on the second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. That performance was just lacked that intensity.
The good, the bad, the grand coming your way every Monday morning here on OTBAM as we reflect on what happened over the course of the weekend. Not easy to find a whole pile of negativity I found over the course of the weekend. Maybe it's just me. Maybe we're just in good spirits these days. Maybe the late year sunshine, the sort of Indian summer, the reopening of society means that actually the red will just be non-existent from time to time. So we are reaching here, I'm not going to lie, for the bads this week. As you can see, sorry, we're not reaching whatsoever. What am I talking about? In the red, first up this morning, Kenny's critics. Everybody who ever had anything bad to say about Stephen Kenny, you've been proven wrong. Your boys, your takes took one hell of a beating on Saturday night as the Republic of Ireland smashed the mighty Azerbaijan 3-0.
I read the headlines in the papers last week, Baku or bust, right?
You did.
So the opposite of bust is boom, as we know. It's even more boomer these days. So it's Baku or boom. So it's like, give them the new contract now and be done with it, right?
I mean, that's what you're taking away from the coverage.
That was the tone. But now, actually, I'm wrong. The Examiner is, Kenny needs good November to convince FAI. It's this endless cycle of No. I didn't mean a good performance, which was convincing, where we played good football away from home, as Dan McDonald pointed out. What was his whatever way he phrased it? Would it be churlish or using out of context results or stats to boost your case? He was pointing out that we scored as many goals in this campaign as we did in the entire previous campaign with two games left to go. I mean, yeah.
It's really interesting because what we had for, I would say, a lot of the Stephen Kenny era so far was a series of decent performances in games, and the end product wasn't there. The result wasn't there. And I don't necessarily blame people for getting fed up with watching Ireland if the results aren't coming. I think on this show, maybe we were we had a heavy focus on the performances. I think it's fair to say over the last little while. So I don't think it's fair to then shift the goalposts if you were in the camp where you thought Kenny wasn't delivering, and to remain critical or to even kind of refocus your efforts on being critical after a good result. Because that's what it was. And that was what was important, I guess, coming away from this window, that there was going to be positive results. And really, if you're going to pick a game, I mean, it had to be the Azerbaijan game that Ireland won between the two games in this window. Now, the thing is, I absolutely think it's fair enough to analyse more than just the result from Saturday night.
And here's the thing. We're not going to fall into the same idiotic approach that some people have fallen into when it has come to looking at what's happened, where you can take whatever small sequence of events, paint this grand picture and go, well, that's the pattern of behaviour that we've seen, when actually that's not the case. So the performance the other night was really, really bad after we scored. It was good up until we scored, and then it was bad after we scored. What's the reason for that? We will talk with Vinnie Perth a little bit later on about this, but it would be good to understand a bit more about that. Is it because we don't have enough craft in midfield? Is it because they're quite low on confidence and we're looking around going, Jesus, what do we do now? We've just scored early. That's not what we've no experience of this in this system. And it almost felt a little bit like they were unsure about how to get back, because they played really well for the first 10 minutes where they were pressing high up, and the distance between the defenders and the midfielders was actually quite tight. But after that, the defenders dropped off. Azerbaijan started to create some chances, and it wasn't a great performance at that point. But then, having a bit of quality in the field in Callum Robinson, who was unavailable for, Jesus, it's a real pity about the virus. Mm-hmm. It's a real pity the virus stole some caps from Callum. You get to see what difference it makes when you have most of your best players available to you.
And what's really interesting is that when you see how, especially the first goal, it was just such quality from Callum Robinson, something that we haven't seen from an Irish player in a while. Maybe those moments from Troy Parrott against the Andorra game give us a glimpse of what might be to come in that department. And I think we're getting to a stage now where we're like, we can definitely make do with what the Republic of Ireland have up front. It's just, it's not as bad as maybe we thought it was, or maybe as bad as it was a year ago, that there's a decent level of experience there in Robinson, who obviously comes with quality, and then younger players as well. And it just feels that the problem areas are fewer than they were a year ago. It just feels that in attack now, we actually have a little thing called depth. Maybe depth is too strong, because I think if you look at the performance of Daryl Horgan the other night, he's not been consistent. I think it's unfair to judge Horgan's international career on the basis of Saturday, because I think he's actually been good under Stephen Kenny, but he wasn't good on Saturday night. And he's probably who you have to include if you're going to get talking about depth. But you talk about someone like Ogbeni and how sensational he was coming off the bench in the couple of times you've seen him in the Ireland shirt this year. He is a guy that I would love to see start against Qatar the next day. You'd love to see himself and Callum Robinson either side of Adam Ida up front and see what happens. And then you're talking about pinning the hopes of your depth on the likes of Aaron Connolly and Troy Parrott. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with, you know, the pressure on those two players in particular not being the pressure to lead the line all the time and to be the starters and to score goals for Stephen Kenny over the course of the next year, 18 months. I'm okay with them being in the mix with those five attackers fighting for three spots up front. And for me, that's as deep as you can possibly be with Ireland in the context of the post-Robbie Keane era.
Yeah, I think as well that Horgan is an excellent sub to come on when the game's breaking up, where there's 25 minutes left to go and the defence is getting tired. And it's great that he got his opportunity the other night, but certainly you can see why the change was made at halftime, and there is strength in depth around that area. We still don't, and we still need some more midfielders.
Well, that's the issue,
you know. So and maybe Jason Knight being sick during the week, you know, it did look like when Knight and Ida were sick during the week, it was like, oh, here we go again, something's going wrong in the build up to the week. But actually we got out of that, and we didn't have Seamus Coleman on the trip. So finally we're actually getting to a position where enough players are available and they have experience in the system. The coaching is clearly working. Like in the post-match interview, where bizarrely he wasn't asked about the week that he'd had, Callum Robinson did speak about working in those pockets. This is something we're working on with the coaching ticket. It's like there was a clear sign of that. There's a sign that they're doing work on the training ground that is being effective on the field of play, which I don't think you can say about an Ireland team in a long time. Maybe all the way back to Trapattoni, where it was clear what he was doing was 4-4-2, ultra defensive. And that manifested itself on the field of play. You could see exactly what that was. But certainly, since then, it doesn't feel like we've had a discernible style of play that the coaching ticket and the manager has influenced in the same way that this has. So I know loads of people out there still are like, oh, no, no. And it feels still a little bit ridiculous, but it feels like people still want Stephen Kenny to fail for whatever reason. And I don't understand that. I really don't understand that. There was a bunch of people who were like, this isn't good enough. We just won 3-0 away from home.
Yeah. Yeah, no, like,
where's that coming from?
It comes from, as I say, shifting your view from results mattering to all of a sudden the performance is the be-all and end-all. And people are saying, what if Callum Robinson doesn't score that screamer? What if the goalkeeper actually gets his arms to the ball and then all of a sudden you're going to the second half nil all?
Oh, the penalty. He was really lucky. Is it the penalty? It was a complete foul. Your man's pulling Doherty's shirt. It's a foul.
That was a joke that even went to VAR, and Parrott should have had a penalty himself as well later on in the second half. And like, as I say, it's totally possible to accept that the performance needs to get better. And it is interesting how even within the Kenny era, things have evolved a little bit. It was a more direct display, it felt, on Saturday than maybe we're used to seeing. I think since Anthony Barry's come in, there has been a change, I think, going to three at the back and going a little bit more direct when they need to. I mean, I still think that Bazunu has such quality, and I think there were his qualities along the back five to play out from the back at times. But to mix it up is what all the good teams do, even teams who are generally used to playing out from the back. If you look at Manchester City, for example, you see Ederson ping the ball long from time to time. And I'm no way comparing Republic of Ireland to Manchester City, but that you need to be able to mix it up depending on the opposition. And I think that Ireland have been better at that over the last little while. The midfield question is the big one. And you have two players in there who on paper should be better than the conversation we're having. We're talking about it as a real problem area. And yet you have Jeff Hendrick, and you have Josh Cullen in there, two players who are playing at a good level, in particular Hendrick, who scored a goal in the Premier League right before the international break. And maybe there is something in the system that is hanging the two midfielders out to dry. When you are playing five defenders and three attackers, the two men in the middle might look very much like the men in the middle and might look like they're in no man's land at times. At the same time, you do look at some of the other prospects coming through. I would have loved to have seen Jason Knight get minutes at the weekend. That wasn't obviously going to be possible. But even looking more towards the future, Gavin Kilkenny was excellent by all accounts against Luxembourg in the under-21s over the course of the weekend. Could there be a spike in Jason Malumbi's career over the next little while?
Yeah.
Like those three players in particular are three that we'll keep an eye on over the next little while and hope that just one of them comes through. We need, I hate to make this comparison, but we need a Declan Rice. Like, that's the exact sort of midfielder that the Republic of Ireland need. And to be honest with you, you'd even take, this isn't probably going to go down well, but you'd even take a Glenn Whelan type player at this point. Just something steady, somebody to do the right thing, somebody who understands the link between the defence and the attacking midfield positions. I think that sort of steady metronome of a player is something that Ireland can really do at the moment.
Somebody who's going to play 300 Premier League games in central midfield. You know, I think we underestimate what Glenn Whelan achieved in his career.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I'm not saying that would be the sort of player that would take Ireland to World Cups or anything like that. But I think right now that sort of steady presence in midfield could be so important because the attack is so exciting. And if you do see the attack that I mentioned earlier on that I'd like to see, which is Ogbeni and Robinson either side of Ida, you need a boring couple of players elsewhere in the team to allow that thing to thrive. But you look elsewhere around the squad, the front three that we mentioned, we've obviously spoken about the goalkeeper situation, and then all the way across that back five, there are now options. There is depth everywhere in that squad with the exception of midfield. And with that just comes a great sense of excitement. And there has been improvements throughout Stephen Kenny's reign. The final part of the jigsaw was just getting the results. Now, in fairness, I do think that November is important. I do think that the Luxembourg game is a massive opportunity. And I know Serbia only beat them 1-0 the other day, and Serbia are a hell of a lot better than the Republic of Ireland. But if Ireland can get a win in Luxembourg, I think that will... I think it's a no-brainer at that point that Stephen Kenny's going to be kept down for the 2024 campaign. I think even a draw might do it for him, depending on the result in that game and the Portugal game. But there is also the opportunity to go and win that game. And if you beat Luxembourg away from home in the last window of this campaign, I think Ireland go into 2022 in a really positive place. So I'm not willing to say we're good now and everything is fine. I still think November is important.
I don't think
important.
Anybody is saying we're good now and this is a finished... Like, I know, again, people talk about the amount of games that he's had, but how many games has he actually had where they haven't been completely ruined by COVID or whatever? So not many, but since the summer, there's been the camp in Andorra and another camp, and since then it's clear to say that performances have improved. The Azerbaijan home game wasn't a great performance, but we did create an endless amount of opportunities, and perhaps maybe if we'd had our first choice strikers and attack available for that, the result would have been completely different. It's a sliding doors moment, we don't know. But certainly now we're beginning to build up some evidence that things are going in the right direction, and for me, that's all I'm looking for. I'm looking for a coach who understands the football architecture in Ireland, who has a vision for what we're trying to achieve, who communicates that vision clearly, and who's working his nuts off. That's literally all we actually can ask for. And it's been a while since we've had that. So give us your view. 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number, or of course you can leave a comment on the YouTube stream. 350. It was 276 appearances in the Premier League. That's just the Premier League, obviously, for Stoke that Glenn Whelan made.
Yeah, and like that sort of experience, you'd like to think that one of the three midfielders, the young midfielders that I mentioned there, will step up and get that experience over the next little while.
Bite your hand off of that now, wouldn't we? 276 for one of those guys to have that career, you'd be like, yeah, that's great.
But like you would like to think that Jeff Hendrick wouldn't be a million miles away from that. I know he's a different player, but at the same time,
the younger player's coming through.
Sorry, yes, of course. But 100%. And I think that even to achieve that would suggest that they're a level above Whelan, given that the Premier League has gone up to a whole other level in the post-Whelan years. Like, what I find, like, as a kind of a rubber stamping so far of the Kenny era is almost some of the sounds that we've heard during the tough times. That it's all well and good, the players coming out and saying everything was great, and Callum Robinson saying we worked on that in training during the week, and he's high on adrenaline after the game. And that's great. That is a really positive thing to hear. But for me, it was listening to Matt Doherty in the aftermath of the Portugal game and that particular window, the Azerbaijan draw at home, just really going to bat for the coaches. Because we've seen it so many times in dressing rooms at international level and at club level, where you can tell from what a player says in the media that things just aren't going well. And it's not necessarily throwing the coach under the bus, it's just not going to bat for the coach. But in fact, these Ireland players have gone to bat for the coaching staff, and it's not just Stephen Kenny over the last little while. The top coaching is what Matt Doherty has constantly referred to when it comes to this camp. And it's now that after they finally get their positive competitive result that you can look back and say, okay, that makes sense now, and that was a real thumbs up for what they're doing at the moment, because we can only judge so much.
We got the first team coach of the Champions League winners.
Yeah.
Like, this is as good as coaching gets. That's part of the coaching ticket. That's the other thing that didn't really make any sense to me. It's like, oh, we lost these Irish legends from the coaching ticket. Yeah, we did. And then we replaced them with literally the coach of the European champions. That would actually be an upgrade. Mm. There's no ifs, ands or buts about it. That's a clear upgrade. When Duffer left, he obviously had a good time at Celtic, but hasn't worked at senior football since, and was only there for a short time. We replaced him with the guy who's in charge of the first team coaching at the European Champions. That's like, there's no knock on Duffer yet. Maybe he makes it there, maybe he doesn't, but that's an improvement.
Yeah. Like, the thing is, you won't get a proper answer to that question. It's impossible to know exactly what the benefit is from each coach, but certainly Barry's CV is impressive, and more impressive than many coaches that have worked with Ireland over the last little while. So it should lead to an uptick in fortunes, and it seems that it's led to a bit of change. Again, we don't know exactly what sparks change in the camp, but it seems like something that might have worked out okay in the end for Kenny.
All right, OTB AM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette, put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Also in the red this morning, a bit of uncertainty around this one.
Yeah, like as I say, I think we're reaching here. Munster being in the red would be ridiculous, to be honest. I thought they were absolutely outstanding yesterday. It's just the Snyman news, which seems to be dominating things, I think, across the papers this morning. It is the big angle.
Significant is the word that was used. Oh God, don't tell me that's his knee, sighs Donal Lenihan.
Yeah, that's from his live commentary on TV yesterday, and it sounded like Donal Lenihan was going to cry when he saw Snyman hobbling off, and it was just a horrible sight. He seemed to think in commentary that it wasn't the knee that he had already injured. He might be right. I think it was very, very hard to tell, and I think either way, if it is a re-injury or if it is the other knee, it's just not good. Any injury after coming back from one is just a terrible thing, and I mean, there have been positive stories on the injury front from an Irish province perspective over the last little while. I mean, Adam Byrne coming back to score tries after 22 months out was a phenomenal story at the weekend. You just hope that Snyman isn't going to have anywhere near that level on the sidelines in total now as a result of this, and hopefully it's not as bad. Like, the thing is, what happened with Snyman last year was he goes up for a line-out in that first game against Leinster and then just misses the entire season. Hopefully this is not of that severity where you could have him back the opposite side of Christmas, and he builds up minutes maybe with those Champions Cup games from January, and is there come to business end of the season, because we've spoken about this over the course of the last week, or we speculated about this over the course of the last week, that Munster may have better depth than at any point over the last 10 years, which means they have a better chance of winning trophies than at any point over the last 10 years. This is where the depth comes into question. And this is where those lads have to step up and play extra minutes and really grind it out. And we're going to have to see newer faces. Like Thomas O'Hearn, for example, is going to be brought on earlier and earlier as the season goes on. It'll then be down to those guys to see, can they pull Munster through to the knockout stages of the two most important two competitions. And if they can get there and then get Snyman back, I think that's as good as you can hope for from the situation.
Yeah, it's pretty grim. He is the... So there's an ad for the game against Connacht at the weekend in the Examiner as well, and he's the bigger of the three heads who are advertising it, has become, in his absence, a cult figure for the Munster fans, and clearly somebody who could have a significant impact on their ability to win trophies this year. So that has just, unfortunately, not worked out at the moment, and we wish him all the best. So, Van Grant said he wouldn't speculate until after they got the scan results, but he did say it seemed significant, and having spoken to him in the dressing room, he's a very important squad player for us in terms of what he brings. Hopefully we get some good news, but it's difficult to say at this stage. After speaking to him in the changing room, I'm pretty worried about it. So even when he was trying not to comment, Van Grant couldn't help himself expressing the fears, and that is on the front of the Examiner this morning. So that is Munster. Obviously their performance was excellent. And there's an out-half controversy brewing, not for Ireland, but for Munster. And does that automatically mean that it brews for Ireland as well? Or did Johnny Sexton's appearance early off the bench and the brilliance of that appearance suggest that he is playing as well as he's ever done? Mm. We'll talk about this with Alan Quinn a little bit later on. So what's next?
We'll go into the Amber next, and we're going to put heavyweight boxing into the Amber this week, the Grand. And I think it's quite obvious for people why it's in the Grand. Yes, what we had on Saturday night was one of the greatest sports events of the year. It's going to be hard to top it in terms of drama, in terms of pure athletic quality, and in terms of an incredible narrative going into this. Like, I mean, it felt like hyperbole going into it that Ali Frazier could be mentioned at all in the context of Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder. But once things start to develop, once you get through four rounds of this fight on Saturday night, you're like, holy shit, okay, it wasn't hyperbole to mention it. Of course, it's not going to be on that level when it comes to the historical analysis of boxing, but in terms of it being a standalone, incredible, breathtaking fight, that is exactly what we got on Saturday night. It is something where you almost look at it, and of course it's not going to be something that happens in the not too distant, in the near future, but you just wonder if Wilder could maybe stay as a professional boxer for a little while. Same with Tyson Fury. You'd love to see him do it again. You'd love to see him go for a fourth. I mean, it rarely happens. I think maybe...
But why? We know it's going to win. We know what's going to happen, don't we?
Yeah, well, I would watch it again. I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen throughout Saturday night. I think that when Tyson Fury goes down twice in the one round, I think you have to start thinking that Deontay Wilder might actually be in with a shout of winning it. So I think that's as suspenseful as you might want it to be. Yes, of course, Fury will say that he won all three fights, and I think he's probably right on that. And he is the better fighter and the best heavyweight of his generation. But I still think these two guys bring the best out of themselves. Now, the reason why it's in the Amber, obviously, is the connections to Daniel Kinahan. And it just is so disappointing, more so in the aftermath of Saturday night, that we do have what was genuinely one of the best sporting events in recent times, just marred completely by this. As I say, the narrative is so important when it comes to the sport, and the build-up was non-existent, certainly in this country, it felt, for obvious reasons. And it's just so needless. It's like these two boxers are two of the greatest athletes of their generation. They have absolutely no need whatsoever to be involving themselves with any sort of negative publicity that will in any way damage the sporting event that we got on Saturday night. But unfortunately, that's the reality of what happened, and that's what we're dealing with. And it completely destroys the sport, which should be in an amazing place. This should be the next golden generation of heavyweight boxing. We complained long enough about the Klitschko's stranglehold on the sport. That is firmly in the rearview mirror now. Not only are we getting great boxers, we're getting incredible fights between these boxers. We're getting amazing moments, and I know it's not connected to Kinahan, but even the likes of Joshua and Usyk a couple of weeks ago, it's hard to disassociate the heavyweight boxing sphere in general from what we've learned over the last couple of years. So it just leaves a really sour aftertaste on what should be a brilliant weekend for the sport.
I have to say, I don't agree with you in that I don't think anybody actually cares. I think that the whole point about all this stuff is, right, so I'm reading the BBC gossip page, and it's Saudi Arabia will target four Man United players and the transfer window opens in January. Martial, Van de Beek, Eric Bailly, Jesse Lingard, and the Saudi Arabian flags are flying outside Newcastle. People don't care about this stuff. The front page of every single newspaper in England has Tyson Fury and the party that he had afterwards. Still, this is the day after. And all of the, I don't have any of the actual English front pages with me this morning. The back page of The Guardian has that amazing picture of Wilder and the referee actually tries to catch him at one stage in that one. Is he on the front of the London Times? No, okay, so it's they've gone with Amal Clooney. And I don't know, I actually think no one cares about it. In the middle of the fourth round, when you were watching it, were you thinking, ooh, it's a real pity that this spectacle has been ruined for me? Or was it afterwards? And is it 48 hours afterwards?
Well, it's kind of throughout, to be honest with you. Like, I mean, I wasn't necessarily overly excited for the fight, given what we know. I think it's a curiosity. I got up on Sunday morning and watched it back. Like, It is. No, like I, the usual response to what you just asked there is no, it doesn't come into your head whatsoever. But I think the entire premise of enjoying a sporting event comes from your build up to it, your excitement beforehand, how much reading you've done beforehand, how many times you've rewatched the first and second fights, for example, and how much you've invested yourself in getting pumped for an amazing sports event. That's why we do this show. That's why we talk about sport, is because we love it and we're excited for everything that's coming up and the anticipation of what's to come. And that anticipation was bulldozed by the reality around the organisation of this fight. And with that then comes a smaller degree of enjoyment from the event itself.
Okay, I think that I think fair enough, and from your perspective, and I know a bunch of people feel that way, but the vast majority of sports fans, and the reason that people get involved in sport is that the reason that the people we're talking about here get involved in sport is so that everybody forgets about other things. And I would argue that the English papers don't really care about any of that kind of stuff. It was a small story around the Joshua fight. It disappeared, and sure, boxing's full of shady people. And ultimately, what's going to happen with the football? Big story this week, big story next week, big story perhaps the week after, and then the signings start to arrive and the football improves, and they all become part of the same massive global story. And ultimately, people stop caring, I think. That's why I would say heavyweight boxing is straight in the green, because what happened was the fight is all anybody's talking about. The fight was so spectacular. Fury is such an amazing, charismatic champion that everybody forgets about the horrible things Tyson Fury said. Now, he was going through some very significant mental health issues at the time. Perhaps that was the cause of what he was saying. Perhaps that revealed his true character. You get to make your own mind up about that if you want to do the reading. But the position he's in now as the greatest heavyweight of his generation, like, he begins to catapult himself into the conversation for one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. And then no one's talking about anything else.
But can I just be really cynical on that for a moment? And you compare the two situations that you've mentioned there, the boxing scenario and the Newcastle United scenario. You're really cynical about it. Like, you can't make a signing as a boxer. Like, I mean, the Saudi Arabian money will be used to much greater effect in Newcastle. That connection, that murky connection, will be of huge benefit to Newcastle United. I would contend that the murky connections we've had in heavyweight boxing have been to no benefit to the sport whatsoever. That we still would have had two great fighters. Maybe the underbelly here is that this was promoted exceptionally and your man's a marketing genius. I severely doubt that. I would suspect that there would have been a very similar amount of eyeballs on this on Saturday night, regardless of who brokered the fight. And that is a different scenario to the Newcastle United thing. And yes, that's being totally cynical about the whole thing. But
yeah, maybe. Look, it's impossible for us to know until somebody writes the Athletic piece, brings us into the room. So if the Fury Joshua fight had happened, then I think your premise would have been clearly wrong. There was, like, everybody said that fight was happening when it was happening because it was made by a deal maker at the centre of that. And, like, maybe that was hyperbole, but again, why would you be? I don't know why you would make that stuff up. So I think it's all on a scale, and I don't know. Loads of people thought the fight was amazing. Like, that's the thing.
I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, and so the heavyweight boxing is actually in the green. Heavyweight boxing has recovered. I would argue the heavyweight boxing has completely recovered from the Klitschko era, and how it got there, people don't care about it. Not Mike Grimm out, loads of people. Other people are like, talk about the boxing. What are you doing here? Well, why do I have to worry about this stuff?
Yeah, and I mean, I can appreciate that view. And yeah, like, it's interesting. I just think that maybe in the UK you do get a different appreciation of the connection than here. There was a huge Irish angle to this story, it felt, and it wasn't on the back pages of the newspapers. So maybe there are just more people in Ireland who watched the fight on Saturday night differently about it.
It's on all the back pages of the Irish papers today. The front page of the Irish Times sports section is, I'm the greatest heavyweight of my era, Fury basks in Wilder win. Back page of the Sun.
But I mean throughout the last year and a half. And I mean, the...
Has it not been?
I would say that there is still an ignorance regarding the connections to... boxing's connections to Kinahan in the UK compared to in Ireland, I would say. I think that's surely a fair enough comment, is it not?
sorry, what's the comment?
That there is more of a focus on Kinahan here than there will be in the UK.
Yeah.
People are just more familiar with the story.
It was a 2 week or a week and a half story when the fight was happening, but I think it'll all disappear again.
It probably will. It probably will. And that's the reality of where we're at. But for me, it was kind of hard to disassociate the two. And the more amazing the fight got, the more you're disappointed, the more you're like, I really want the sport to be close to perfect. But then again, I'm sure there are plenty of people who will say it was never perfect. It's always had a murky history. It's always roamed into the grey area, to say the very least, down through the years.
We have two more quick ones to get through here.
Yeah, let's move on to the good. So we've got Ireland, which we've already touched on, but we need to talk about Katie McCabe before that, because Katie McCabe is a joke, quite frankly. Three goals in three WSL games. She only scores screamers at this point, scored in Arsenal's 3-0 win against Everton yesterday. To put it into context, she scored four goals in the league in all of last season. She's already one behind them, her own tally this season. She assisted from a corner as well yesterday. Just this brilliant performance. Arsenal with a 100% record in the league so far. Out in top now. They scored 19 goals, conceded two at this point, having won all five of their games. And in the middle of this, we have an Irish superstar, which is kind of cool. It's something that maybe we've bemoaned in the men's game for quite some time, the lack of a Roy Keane anymore. It's pretty class to have somebody at the very top of the league who is an integral part of the team. And like, it was really interesting listening to her speak in the aftermath of the game yesterday when she was interviewed on Sky, I think it was, where she talks about Arsenal bringing in Stephanie Catley this season, who was due to play a little bit at left back. And I mean we saw McCabe playing on the left of a three over the course of the last few weeks, but McCabe was back at left back yesterday, and I guess thriving from that position again. As I say, she scored a couple of screamers already this season, but there was even that goal against Manchester City where she beats the offside trap and races through and slams the ball to the back of the net. It seems that she scored goals from different positions all throughout this year and has gone to a whole other level as a result of the threat to her position and the threat to her place in the starting 11. And it's been absolutely phenomenal. Like, the Arsenal manager was talking about her versatility afterwards, saying that she's so versatile. She's played a little bit as an attacking midfielder for us as well this year. She's been brilliant when she's been doing that as well in all those positions, whether it's winger, fullback, attacking midfield. She will give you the pace, give you the dribbles with her left foot, and obviously her crosses and finishes. She can play in a lot of different positions. And then he goes on to say, what I like about Katie is that she can bring different things to the team depending on where you have her in the starting position. So as a coach, sometimes you can fit her into a position where you think it will fit the match picture. So I guess you could say there's an element of the utility player about her, but that would completely undervalue what she's done for Arsenal so far this season. They're flying, she's flying, and it's brilliant to see.
All right, what's next?
Well, Ireland. I mean, yeah. Any final thoughts on the Republic of Ireland and how amazing they were and how Baku went boom?
It's good to be talking about an Ireland performance where we scored three goals away from home. It happens pretty rarely, especially in a competitive fixture. I mean, what do people want? What do people want?
They want us to smash Qatar on tomorrow night.
How important is that game for you?
It is important. I think that
it is a friendly. It's a friendly at home against Qatar. So why is it all of a sudden important?
Well, here's the thing. Like, there's been a criticism that has actually been written this morning that when Ireland have a good performance, they come home and then things go awry. And I think that's based off the 2-1 defeat to Portugal and then coming home and then falling flat against Azerbaijan. So people are like, oh.
The Luxembourg game, I think, as well.
Obviously, as well. So maybe there's this thought out there that, oh, we can't get carried away with this win, because we all know what happens after a good performance away. They come home and they fall flat. So
competitive matches. Yeah.
Yeah, in competitive matches. So I don't know, like, Qatar got beaten 3-0 by Portugal over the course of the weekend. To use a barometer of what Portugal do to a team for what we expect from Ireland, I think is a tad unfair, but maybe they could have beaten them by a bigger margin. Looking at the stats, I didn't see any of the game, but it looked like they had all the ball and plenty of chances to rack up five or six potentially. So I think the expectation would be to win, but it is, let's make no bones about the fact, Saturday was the game. Saturday was yeah. the game that would define this window.
Yeah.
And they won. And they won well. And they could have won by more. And it was a good performance. It wasn't a great performance. It was a good performance. And I think as a whole, that already puts a green tick beside this international window, regardless of what happens tomorrow night. Unless they get, like, hammered by Qatar.
Eamon Dunphy's quick take. Robinson's goal was one of the best I've ever seen for Ireland. we're all marvelling over Salah's weak foot a week earlier. Robinson's weak one isn't bad either. What bugs me is the fact that he's 26 and didn't win his first cap until 3 years ago, just when Martin O'Neill's tenure was coming to an end. He'd been scoring regularly for Preston in the Championship for more than a year before that. O'Neill was very fond of pointing out he didn't have the players. Maybe he just didn't open his eyes. What strikes me about Saturday and Stephen Kenny's tenure as manager is the relevance of Ernest Hemingway's definition of courage. Courage to Hemingway is grace under pressure. After Robinson's early goal, Ireland didn't back it up for quite a while. They looked nervy and it was understandable. When you go so long without a competitive win, there's bound to be pressure. I thought that was a fairly obvious explainer for the whole thing, is that there's a team very low on confidence and wins like this are important. So maybe in that context, you know, they're going to point back to a body of work that goes to the camp when they got the opportunity to be together for the Andorra game. They got a win, they scored some goals. Since then, performances have definitely been an upward curve. You could definitely point to the Azerbaijan home game and say, well, we didn't win that game. Considering the opposition, maybe we should have. But, you know, success is lumpy, as the phrase goes.
Yeah, I think if we're judging things so far, I think the Azerbaijan home game has to be the low point, doesn't it? Like, I think just in terms of the performance, like even the Luxembourg game, you kind of felt that there was enough play in that first half that Ireland possibly could have scored a goal and not been in that position where they get beaten. I think Azerbaijan at home was definitely the low point, and it feels that what they've done since then has been relatively positive. But just on that Hemingway quote and Dunphy, what he's saying there, like, are we going to compare this to past regimes as well, where maybe Ireland score and go back to their shell a little bit? Is there something a little bit deeper that happens here with Ireland teams?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. It's 12 minutes past 8. That is this week's performance ranking.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.